guys now.
Thank you very much, Rob. In studio with us this morning is Nickerson South Hutchinson USD 309 Superintendent Curtis Nightingale. Good morning, Curtis.
Good morning.
All right. So the school board meeting for USD 309 talked about a four-day school week, and as I understood it, and our story on Hutch Post reflects this, that has been set aside at least for a while. They basically said, yeah, let's wait a little longer before we make any decisions on this.
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up.
Okay, and that was 2026, right?
Correct.
Okay, so they're gonna do that. And what was the reasoning behind bringing it to the board in the first place?
So last spring, we had a couple of board members that requested that we gather information on four-day school weeks from districts that were currently doing it to see whether or not that was something that we should be looking at in terms of the ability to recruit and retain teaching staff. And so we began that process and began researching some of the documents that are out there and research studies that have been done. But at the same time, if you remember, we were also doing a bond initiative. And so we were trying to have some community meetings and we were talking about the bond, but I would also talk a little bit about the four-day initiative as well, just that we were collecting and gathering information on it. And I think people started to get confused, and justifiably so, because I mean, we're trying to cover two pretty heavy topics at the same time. And so I started getting questions from community members about, so if I vote for the bond, am I voting for 4-day, and is the 4-day a part of the bond? And so the board decided to table the 4-day discussion at that point to focus on the bond. And so that's what we did. So late last fall, after obviously the bond passed, those board members requested we pick that back up and gather that information because they'd like to see a presentation on what that could look like. And so I had my committee continue their work. They split into two groups and they went and sought out some districts that currently use the 4-day schedule and gather information from them on pluses and minuses and things that have been good and things that didn't go well and how did the transition go and those types of things. And they gathered that information. And so when they were prepared with their presentation that they wanted to give the board, I encouraged them to let's host a couple of community meetings where we could share this information with our patrons as well. And so we did that. And we also conducted another community survey, similar to the one we had done the previous spring. And we took all that information to the board meeting on Monday night.
Okay. And ultimately, they said, you know, it's not something we want to do right now. And as there was allusion by a couple of the board members, and it's in our story at Hutch Post if people want to go read it, that they'd heard from some families that they might leave the district as a result of that, for whatever their individual family reasons might be. That's kind of a balancing act, I would think, because there might be some families that would say, hey, yeah, for my kid that has special needs or kid that really wants to focus on band or sports or something else that would love to have that extra day for outside practice, outside of stuff, that families like that might want to come in to a school with a 4-day week. So is there any way to know how that would affect enrollment or not? What did the studies say?
No, and I think that unknown is what influenced the board to put it aside. I think not that unknown of how will this impact our families. Do we have families that will pull their kid and go to a different district over this schedule? Is it true that we're going to recruit and retain better staff with this process? So, you know, we heard from patrons that said, well, you may recruit staff, but is it going to be better staff, or is it just going to be staff that doesn't want to work 5 days a week? And you may recruit kids, but is it going to be good kids, or is it just going to be kids that don't want to be in school anyway? And so, again, that's an unknown. And I think the biggest thing for me, I think as I looked at it personally, was just a lot of these districts that have done this and been successful are fairly remote. You know, if you attend that school and you decide to change districts, it's an hour and a half drive for you to go somewhere else. You know, and as you know, in our community, that's not the case. I mean, you throw a rock and hit three different districts, you know. And so with that said, I think that puts us in a unique situation. And so it's hard to compare in all facets. It's hard to compare our situation to anyone else's and say, well, you know, it worked in Baxter Springs, it'll work here. Well, Baxter Springs is a different situation, just like Ashland's different, just like Leon Bluestem's different. I mean, those are just different areas of the state. They've got their own unique circumstances, and so do we.
All right. Well, we'll take a quick break, back with more with Curtis Nightingale coming up. Back on the BW Morning Show, Nick Gosnell, Curtis Nightingale with us from Nickerson, South Hutchinson, USD 309. So with the bond issue passed now, what's gotten done this spring? What's coming up this summer? Where are you on the timeline?
Gotcha. So science labs are done at the high school in completion. All the security fencing went up during spring break, and all of the asbestos and lead abatement was done over the spring break while students were gone. So they are prepared to begin the process now. They'll be breaking ground at South Hutch virtually any day on that two-classroom expansion, and they'll begin renovations in the auditorium at the high school as well, removing those auditorium seats and all of that. So, yeah, I mean, we're plugging right along, and we're on schedule to be completely done by the start of school in the fall.
Wow, that's really pretty incredible. I mean, granted, that's the timeline everybody said, but it always amazes me when timelines are actually followed these days when it comes to construction and things. They've done a really nice job.
Yeah, they're really mobilizing well.
All right, so that now we'll set that aside for a minute, because there's something else that you and I talked about off the air, but I want to make sure people know is happening. The budget process is happening up in Topeka, and that's always a thing, but education has become its own thing that's out separate from the rest of the budget for the last several years. And as I recall, the last time I talked to the guys at the chamber event that I moderated here a couple of weeks ago, there was still a proposal in the House side, at least, to, instead of putting more money into special education, which right now, if at the way the formula is currently written, they're funding, 68, 69, 70%, something like that, of excess cost of special ed. The law as written says 92% is supposed to be funded, but it sounds like instead of adding dollars, they were going to change the equation.
Right. They're going to fudge the numbers a little bit. Yeah. It's the tricky accounting has really been frustrating. You know, just our district alone, this gives you as small as our district is, we're underfunded in special ed by $300,000. So what that means is for every dollar we're underfunded by the state, we've got to pull that from our general fund, which means we take that out of where we would have paid salaries or for any other programming we do in the buildings. We've got to reallocate that money to cover the underpayment that we receive from the state each year.
What's your starting teacher salary in 309?
$40,150.
Okay, so let's say $40,000 for a starting teacher, between $15,000 and $20,000 for benefits, and I'm probably aiming low. $300,000, that's five teachers, isn't it?
You're talking, for us to do a good raise for our staff, you know, you're talking at least $175,000. So, I mean, to get that money recovered from the state would be huge for our people. And that's not just teachers, but our classified staff too. All of our bus drivers and food service workers and repairers and all of our hourly employees.
And that's what's hard about this, because school funding is so specific, and it just keeps getting more specific. Every time the legislature finds a place that they think, well, that dollar shouldn't have gone in that particular direction, particularly with, let's call it, at-risk funding, that has been the case quite often. Apparently, when I was up in Topeka, so this has been several years ago, they were concerned about at-risk funding being used for administration more than for classroom teaching. But and I don't know if that emphasis has changed at all. But it seems like that is often what happens, is that they say, well, let's just move the numbers around rather than changing them fundamentally.
You know, I really feel like education for some of those legislators has become an entitlement, and they see that as dollars wasted. And that's why you hear a lot of this verbiage about return on investment. You know, they want to treat education like a business, and the fact that we put this money in, we're not getting the money back out of it, kind of a thing. And so, you know, when you look at the fact they're trying to reallocate something like $240 million from the public education world and move that into a voucher program so I can fund a homeschool at the same rate we fund the public school here, but that homeschool won't have any of the same accountability, so we won't be audited. That homeschool won't have any testing scores that they have to report. They don't even have to hire licensed staff. They can literally have Aunt Bob come in and teach whatever, you know what I mean? That they can do those types of things with no accountability. That goes to show you a little bit. And then I think the other piece of it is that they're actually talking about right now is starting to recoup what. So the LOB is what we locally pay in taxes that goes to the schools. And what the state wants to do now is they want to start counting those dollars as state funding. So, for example, if we locally raise a dollar, the state wants to say, yeah, we gave you that dollar. Rather than recognizing the fact that, no, I paid that dollar as a patron. I put that dollar in. But the state wants to count that as a dollar they paid and then take it off of the dollar that they would have had to have given us through the formula. And so, I mean, there's just so many little games and tricks being played with the accounting rather than just doing what they need to do. We've all seen the news. We saw that the state over the last couple of years has taken in way more revenue than they expected. The money is there. But they won't do this because, again, I believe they see education as an entitlement.
And it is a struggle when there are people who talk about education in terms of percentage of the budget rather than looking at trying to make sure that outcomes are as good as they can be with what there is, and yet there's a difference between the ROI that you might want from a business and the ROI that you get from a school. I mean, when you take a test, tests are graded on the basis of the knowledge of the students. That bell curve isn't going to change. There's going to be a bell curve no matter how many dollars you put in or don't put in. There's going to be a bell curve. I'm sorry, Garrison Keillor is not walking through that door. Every child is not above average. Mm-hmm. Not to put it too bluntly, but at the same time, funding wise, as they get ready to do a whole new formula in 2027, does that give you concerns about the future of smaller districts across the state?
Well, I think this election year is going to be huge because, I mean, look at the people that are currently manning those education. Funding committees, and they will be the ones in charge of putting together the new funding formula. And you know, I think as electorates, we've got to do a great job of putting people in those offices that represent our needs and what we view as valuable. And I can tell you right now that I see education as being a value. It's not an entitlement. I mean that is not what it is, and it's always been at the forefront of what Kansas believes in. And we've just been kind of railroaded right now, and it needs to be corrected.
Well, and that's why there's an Article 6 in the Kansas Constitution. Go read it sometime if you'd like. It's 7:30 at KWBW. Hutchinson News is coming up.